You lie!
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 13, Transforming Real Life into a Story, and Disney's Moana. Welcome back, everyone, to another round of story structure and story analysis. I had originally planned on talking about audience reach this week, which is a story point in Dramatica that combines the main character's problem-solving style with the story limit on the story. And when you combine those two together, you can actually predict who will show up to see your film or read your book or see your play. But unfortunately, in working with Dramatica.com, I realized that the filter on there is broken. So I have some work to do this week to get that fixed up, and then we will get to that next week. But it's okay because I just recorded an awesome interview, my first interview, with Dave Pimentel, the head of story on Disney's Moana, and a longtime friend. We both really love story. We both love Seven. What's in the box? You lie! That's my Brad Pitt. And so I think you'll really enjoy that interview. I had seen Eddie the Eagle this weekend, and by coincidence, I'm also working with a writer who is interested in taking their life story and turning it into an actual story. And I thought there were some interesting points to be made, seeing how they took the real-world situation of Eddie Edwards and fictionalized it for a narrative, and what you can do with Dramatica to make that more creative and more unique. So we'll be discussing that later on today, right after follow-up. I'm still working on the Storyform series for The Dark Horse, the Storyforming screencast series that I'd started with Hunt for the Wilder People about 2 weeks ago. You'll want to check that out on the site. It should be up either later on today or tomorrow. And this one's about twice as long as the first one, and I kind of took my time explaining the through line. So if this is your first introduction to Dramatica, or you're not sure how the through lines work in a story, the Storyforming screencast series for The Dark Horse will be something that you'll want to check out, and that will of course be in the show notes. And if you haven't seen The Dark Horse, which is yet another indie film out of New Zealand, you need to go see it. It's a great, great film, fantastic story, really strong narrative, and brilliant acting. And it's pretty insane that one of the actors in there is a street musician, and he pulls off like one of the best performances. So you should really check that out. I also mentioned in the newsletter that I'm working on a double issue for this month's newsletter. I did not put out one for July, so I think what I'm going to do every year is do a July-August one and a December-January one. So we'll have two sets of gist collections. I'm going to do war and romance, because I thought that would be a nice contrast there. So we'll have all new war gist collection for all you World War II fans, or war fans in general, I guess. And of course, for the lovers at heart, we'll have romance gist collection, which will be interesting for me to see if I can come up with enough stuff. On Discuss Dramatica, there was a question about the tendency, which is a story point in Dramatica where you can tell whether or not the main character will be willing or unwilling to participate in the story's events. And that's a juxtaposition of the main character's approach with the story driver of the overall story. So, for those who don't know the main character approach, main characters have a tendency to either solve problems externally before internalizing them, and beers prefer to solve problems internally. You know, they'd rather change themselves than try and change their environment first. And then the story driver is a story point, which, if you look at, you know, the major plot points within a narrative, they will either all be actions or they will all be decisions. At least they're supposed to be, unless it's B-movie, which we'll probably get into with Dave later today, where it starts out with actions and then there's some decisions in the where it starts out with actions and then there are some decisions there in the middle, and then it goes back to an action and just kind of feels all over the place. So when you put the main character approach with the story driver, you get what is a story point known as tendency, which is either willing or unwilling. And the idea is that if you have a doer in an action story, they will be more willing to participate in the overall story events than, say, a doer in a decision story. And vice versa, a beer in a decision story will be more likely to participate as opposed to a B or in an action story. And the question on Discuss Dramatica was, well, you know, my main character is really willing. They really want to participate. They want to do all this stuff. And it just didn't make sense how you're supposed to encode it. And I gave an example, which I'll leave a link in the show notes. And the idea is that all story points in Dramatica are from the author's point of view. And the biggest mistake people get into is they try and treat these story points as if they're points of views from the characters themselves. You know, if they get into writing the relationship story through line, you know, they feel like they have to censor their actions or they can't say what they want to say. The person new to Dramatica will write it as if it's those two characters feeling those feelings because, you know, they're a writer. They want to feel those things out and actually write that. And that's how you write great stories. But Dramatica's point of view, which we will get into later with the whole predictability ability of Dramatica, is to look at the story points that make up a story from kind of an objective point of view, from the author's point of view, looking at the story. So that tendency is not that the main character themselves is not willing or unwilling to participate, but from an author's point of view, that main character will either be willing to or unwilling to participate in the narrative. And then that just gives the author the ability to see, well, what character would be better suited in that situation. And also inform them that the main character is going to be there more as a point of view rather than someone who's going to actually be driving the story's events, which is perfectly fine. I know there's a lot of people who think the main character slash protagonist slash hero always has to be the one driving the story, but that is not correct at all. You can see Shawshank Redemption or The Terminator or a bunch of other films to see proof of that. So I will leave a link in the show notes to that discussion so you can see the objective point of view that an author should have when they're working with Dramatica. And I mentioned this in the newsletter also, that there's lots of other things in the works, shoring up the Dramatica mentorship program, giving it more of the layered approach where we start at the end with the story and just layer in story points. That seems to be working great, and you'll be hearing more about that in the near future. Hopefully have it ready before school starts. This weekend I saw Eddie the Eagle, which is a light, fun 80s romp talking about Eddie Edwards, the British Olympic ski jumper at the 1988 Calgary Olympics, which I somewhat remember. I feel like I remember him flapping around at the end, but perhaps I made that up in my mind. And it's a real-life story, a real-life account of, you know, what he had to go through working from being a plasterer up until actually participating in the Olympics. And the interesting thing about the story, because it overall, it's very simple, it's really familiar, and completely predictable. But there are reasons for that. There are narrative reasons for that. And it all stems from what they did to actually turn it into a story. So there is a character in there, his coach, Bronson Peary, who's completely made up. He's a completely fictional character that they inserted to give Eddie someone to work off of, which is the exact right thing to do. I mean, if it was just a biopic documentary showing all the stuff he went through, it would be informative and we would learn a lot about Eddie Edwards, but we wouldn't really be convinced of anything. It wouldn't be very inspiring. The film is really inspiring, and after you watch it, you know, you feel like you can have dreams again. All those dreams you lost when you were in your early 30s. But you're inspired because there's an actual story there. There's a what Dramatica calls a grand argument story or a complete story that has all four through lines. You know, if it was just a tale of what it was he was going through, you'd have a bunch of overall story, maybe a little bit of main character, and there wouldn't be any influence character or relationship story through line. So the filmmakers are smart enough to put this character in there, but I don't think they had an idea of what the actual thematics should be for this character. So they kind of fell back on, not so much cliche, but kind of the easy way out, which is just like, well, let's create this character who's down and out, a drunkard has-been, who used to be somebody of import, but now, you know, he's never had his chance, right? And so he's going to be the one that's going to stand up emotionally against Eddie and challenge him and give Eddie a reason to dig in his heels, and remain steadfast to the point where eventually Bronson Peary changes which is great. The story form actually works. I mean, it's completely predictable because you've seen this character before, and you know that the only way that this character will develop is the way that it always has before. So that is why it loses that air of unpredictability that most people like to have in film, because it's pretty obvious that the drunkard has-been who is unproven is going to prove himself by the end of the film, you know, to his coach. So that familiarity kind of breeds this feeling of, well, I've seen this before, and so it's light and it's fun and it's enjoyable, and they play Van Halen, so that's always a good thing. But as uninspired as the Bronson Perry character is, the relationship story between Bronson and Eddie is even more so. You know, there really isn't anything there. They don't really get into the deep thematics of their relationship. They kind of skim the surface. If you're familiar with Dramatica, you know, you have the domains on top. The concern is a more refined look at the problem. Issue is even more refined. And then, of course, the problem is the dead center of where that problem and that through line is coming from. And the relationship through line in Eddie the Eagle just skims the very top surface. I mean, it doesn't go much deeper than we both have different ways of thinking about things. And, you know, how am I going to manipulate you to get what I want? And there is a bit with the father where I guess you could see that there is a bit of a handoff between the father and the Bronson Perry character. But again, since you only see that at the beginning and then at the end, it's very light and fluffy, and you know exactly where it's going to go. I mean, you have a father and son argument that is unending, you know, you got to stop your dreams and become a plasterer like me. And then, you know, the only place to go with that is to end it, to end that conflict. And that's precisely what happened. You know, that's why it's familiar, predictable, and really simple. It's simple because it doesn't go too in-depth into the relationship story through line. It's familiar because if you were brainstorming, okay, what kind of character can we put in here? You know, the drunkard has-been is the first idea that you would come up with. And the idea with Dramatica and using that to actually come up with story ideas is you would plug in all the thematics for Eddie's character, which is really clear, you know, situation through line, right? He had to wear those braces forever and obviously has some kind of disability, and he's looking towards the future and wants to make something of himself. And he's, you know, looking to how things are going, you know, if things are getting better for him or worse for him. And determination is his problem. I mean, that's what's driving him, is he's determined that this is what he's going to do. So when you plug those into Dramatica Story Engine, then it would, you know, give back to you, okay, you need an influence character who's got a fixed attitude, which is exactly what Bronson Perry has. You know, he's got to have a concern of impulsive responses, which is him basically numbing himself with the alcohol and getting rid of any kind of pain there possibly could be. And his problem would be unproven. Then what you would do with Dramatica is you would use our technique of the dramatic playgrounds, where you spin off and do, you know, four or five different characters that have this same thematic ingredients to them, the same fixed attitude, impulsive responses, and unproven problem. But they would be in different genres, different genders, different, you know, just if you ever sat down and you come up with story ideas, your first two or three story ideas are things that have been done a million times. Your first five or six story ideas are things that have been done a million times. But if you can brainstorm and get, you know, to that sixth or seventh one based on these thematic elements, so it's not that you're just all over the place, you're actually coming up with something that will fit in with the story, then you can go back and find a character that is new and unique and specific to you, specific to your experience, and something that people will want to see, and it will seem fresh and new and really exciting. I mean, if you're going to make up a character, why not make up a character that's never been seen before? Why rely on what's been done a million times in the past? So that really is the only problem with Eddie the Eagle. The fact that they were able to get those four through lines in is why the story is inspirational and why it feels good and why it works. I mean, it got, I think, 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's functional. It's just it could have been so much more if more time had been spent creating a character we'd never seen before. And, of course, diving into that relationship story through line and seeing what it is about those differing manners of thinking that is coming into conflict. You know, you get the knowledge, like, what do each of them know about each other and about what it's like to be in that position? You know, it would be that kind of relationship and that unending sensation that, you know, no matter what happens, there will always be somebody that's there against you, and how that would develop into a full-fledged relationship. Eddie the Eagle, while it's entertaining and fun on a Saturday afternoon just to sit back and watch with the family, it could have been so much more with a bit of creativity and a greater understanding of the underlying thematics that are there in the story structure. Okay, welcome everybody. I have Dave Pimentel here. He was head of story on Moana. Hi, Dave. How's it going?
Good, Jim. How are you? Hello, everybody.
Doing great. I should also mention, too, that Dave and I have been longtime friends. We both went to CalArts together.
Yeah, long time.
And we were roommates at Disney.
Back in the day.
On Tarzan, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I would do the elephant and have to work really hard, and Dave had it really easy working on the ape.
Turk. What was my theme phrase? My phrase of
That's good enough. Which speaks a lot about how you feel about animation.
That'll do.
So you just finished up on Moana.
Yep.
And you were the head of story on Moana. So
yes.
What exactly are your responsibilities and what exactly does the head of story do?
Head of story watches over the story and helps create that particular story and all its twists and turns, structurally and character-wise. That's like intellectually, you know. And then on top of that, we work with the directors, writers, and our story crews to build the reels. We build the actual story reels with storyboards, all digitally created usually. Work with the writer to see if, you know, structurally how everything feels. Work with the directors for exactly the same writer's dialogue. Then on the other side, we work with the team. We actually have to coordinate those teams to get the right mix of artists to, you know, you get the action guys, you get the actors, you get the people who are good at emotional drama or, you know, whatever their taste is. And some of those artists can do more than one thing. But you're kind of helping guide them through the process of getting those storyboards to editorial. We also go to editorial, write tons of notes, change tons of boards, and go back to those artists and ask them to help us recreate, reshift, redo. I mean, the story artist from Pixar, Joe Ramp, God rest his soul, he's passed on a long time ago, would always say that it's story reboarding, right?
Oh, why is that?
It's story reboarding because you are constantly reboarding as you go along.
Right.
That was his joke. But he was right.
Yeah, it's funny you say there are different kinds of storyboard artists, because I remember when I was a brief storyboard artist at DreamWorks, for some reason I was the gag guy. Anybody who knows me knows I'm not the gag guy, because I'm into story structure and the whole thing. It's like, why are you making me come up with gags for a montage?
Really,
so that was
funny.
Very short-lived. You work as a liaison between the directors and screenwriters and the people that actually have to make the film, visualize the film, and come up there.
Yeah.
And so do you see, you know, when you have problems with story and you see like things are kind of out of place and you kind of wish things would be different, what kind of say do you have in that? Like, can you talk to somebody about it?
Yeah, I mean, we're usually in a room, like a war room, if you will, constantly in the creation of these stories. We're in that room fighting every day. I say fighting, but debating is a better word. You know, the passion, as you have said about me, the passion is always there amongst many different artists. You know, all pushing and pulling to kind of mold this beast together and find the best story told. So everybody's opinion matters in the room. My opinion matters just as much as the directors, writers, or producers. And the best idea wins. So we sway the movie every day. So as opposed to saying like, well, I'm just a bored guy who, you know, the decisions are made above my head. That could happen, but I would say 95% of the time they are listening, if not 99, they are listening to every opinion by every person at our studio at Disney. And any idea wins. So they are always requesting notes from screenings, or asking people, "What do you think?" And everyone has a say.
Because part of the thing with dramatica and narrative first and is that the story form, which is the basic premise, is that every complete story is a single human mind trying to solve a problem. And when you have so many different voices coming in and so many different opinions, usually that turns into what I call like a schizophrenic story, because the schizophrenic mind, the story form's like all over the place because there isn't one common vision. And you and I have both worked on films in the past where that is the case, where it's just you have no idea what's going on. There just isn't enough time to make the point that they need to make with the amount of time left to finish the film. So with like Disney and Pixar, though, it seems like they've got it pretty much down, and they know who is responsible for, specifically on Moana, who is responsible for keeping that one singular story form in mind, that singular mind. Was there, or was there somebody?
Well, I would say it's ultimately the head of all of each story is the director, but it's inclusive to him or her is the leadership. So
Okay.
that includes the director or directors, the screenwriter or screenwriters if there's more than one, and the head of story and the producer. You could throw the producer in there as well, but that leadership is the group that has to hold the whole crew to a path, and we have to stay on that path and stay the course. And if that group at the head is not, taking care of that, then the rest all follow in line, and you do get like a zigzag of storytelling. But for the most part on our film, it was our directors and screenwriter, Jared Bush, who were, really
Yeah,
at the
because
helm.
I've heard you talk before. Jared is like a huge part of making sure that the structure of things were there. Like you were saying before, if you try to put too many scenes in between certain page count or something like that.
Yeah, Jared is a master at structure, and I mean, practically everything. He wrote Zootopia
Right, which is
as well,
fantastic.
and he's amazing. But we have, structure walls, like where we get all our, what do you call it, postcards or whatever, and you have all your sequences up on the wall, and everything is structured like you would see it in all of these books or whatever that you read about. Even to the points of like the film, like the midpoint is in the center of this built structure, and you could tell where there are too many sequences. You could tell if Act One is fat. You could tell if Act Two A or Two B is fat, or not fat enough. And for Jared, we'd say, well, why don't we do this? Wouldn't this be cool? Wouldn't this be a cool midpoint? And he would say, yes, you can do said idea, great idea, but if you do that, it's going to change A, B, and C. Or, you could change this a little bit halfway and, stay in line with this character's relationship with the other character. But if you change this idea, you're going to have these dominoes that fall this way. He's a master at understanding his whole story. He has the whole thing in his head or on his computer.
Right. He's got it all figured
He's
out.
got it all figured out. And so he usually has all that set up. He understands the themes of his characters and what they're going to need to experience at said time, said point, and how they're going to evolve. And he always vets that with the directors. And, Ron and John are always conscious. They always go back to him. They always,
Right.
or he goes to them, and then they come to me, and we all kind of work together.
Yeah, because I have one writer, I know I was telling you about this earlier, who's got his midpoint is like at page 100 for a
Oh.
155 page script
Yeah,
that
wow,
he wants to end at 105, so he has to
but he
like
knows
cut
it's
out.
called a midpoint,
It's
right?
supposed to be, but he's adamant that that's where it has to happen. So Jerry keeps track of making sure like all that kind of structural stuff is there, but also he can write
Oh,
character, everything. I mean, there's
he's
more to it than
amazing.
just that,
Yeah.
but he kind of helps that one singular vision. Have you had that experience on other films where you feel like that there was you had that confidence in the leadership?
On other films, it's hard. Story's hard. I think Jared is a special case in the way that he's super talented. He know, and I'm not just saying that just because we're hanging
Are
out
you working
talking
with him
about more.
again? Is that
No, I'd like to. I
why?
actually would like to. I'm not actually at this point, but or at least I don't know. I don't know what he's going to be working on next. But
Sure.
I just like him.
No, it's always good to say nice things about people you want to
Yeah,
work with.
but yeah, But no, the truth is, I have experienced this kind of thing at Disney, and especially the attention to telling great
Oh,
stories
you were
of
saying at
Disney.
Disney, the amount of screenings you
Yeah,
thought was
so
key?
yeah, I mean, we at Disney we go anywhere from 9 to 12 versions of the movie gets screened. So I know,
That's insane.
yeah, it's
'Cause I
pretty
remember at
crazy.
DreamWorks, I think it was only like four,
Three
is
or
it? Three or
four,
four,
three or
okay.
four. And I've even asked people at Leica, and like, hey, do you guys screen like 9 times? And they say, oh no, two or three
And is that
or
because they're
four
afraid
tops.
it's not working, or is there another reason for doing
I
it?
think that other companies are concerned that they're going to be, they're worried about budget. I think other companies are concerned about changing things. Whereas Disney, and led by John Lasseter, are story is king. Story is king, man.
Right.
Story
Hey,
is
that's
the number
good.
one thing. And even as much as it's going to hurt the production or, modeling or whoever, you're just going to have to do it because you have to tell a better story.
Right.
So yeah, these movies get screened up to 12 times.
That's crazy.
And it's a benefit to the storytelling, obviously. Sometimes not a benefit to people who've created and built rigs or built worlds and have to redo.
Right.
And it's hard, but that's how Zootopia becomes Zootopia.
Well, because Zootopia wasn't, I'd heard that the fox was, it was originally the
It
fox's story.
was originally Nick's story. Through the reiterations of their, screenings and brain trust meetings and working with Lasseter and taking the film up to Pixar, I believe it was the Pixar brain trust that said, isn't this a story about the Judy Hopps more so than it
Right.
is about, Nick? And I believe that at that point the directors had agreed with that and Lasseter as well and said, yep, that's a better way to go. It was more than halfway through the production of the film that they had to really take a left turn and redo a lot of stuff.
Right,
So,
and now it feels like it's supposed to be her
oh
story.
yeah.
But it's nice because it's so evenly balanced. I
Yeah.
guess maybe because there was stuff in there before with him that it just feels lush. Like it feels like chock
Yeah.
full of good stuff in
It's
there.
such a current film
Yeah.
in the themes that it's holding and what we're going through today. They didn't even know that back then. They didn't
Oh,
know
well, yeah,
that
because it
we were going to have
started.
all the craziness that we have in the world
Right.
that is
Well,
happening.
because I wrote a bunch about it a couple of weeks back because I had just seen it when it came, streaming online, and was just blown away because it's a completely different, again, story form than what you usually get from typical animation. It's very, I mean, it's dealing with prejudice and prey and predator and hanging out with, people you're not supposed to be hanging out with and stuff. It was just great. So for a story structure geek or somebody that's really into narrative, thematic structure, it's just like a wealth of like, oh, this is great. I want more of this.
It's really interesting to hear Jared talk about it, and he says that, they didn't really want to make a film that was going to be preachy,
It's not though,
right?
yeah,
Which is
right.
not, but they wanted to make sure that they were telling really gettable, relatable storylines and have fun with that. And you can get the
It
message in
definitely
an
preaches,
undertone. It
but
does.
it's not like in your face,
Right. It's not about said
it's not
preachy
telling you
thingy.
exactly what you're supposed to feel or whatever.
I mean, it's the same thing with Moana. Early on, we've been in contact with the Polynesian Brain Trust from the islands of Samoa and Tahiti and Fiji and all these archaeologists and scientists and leadership from the different villages and cultures from all those islands, all including New Zealand as well. We've had them vet all of our decisions. We've had table reads for them in Samoa on a research trip that I did. I went with my team, with the team that I was, luckily involved with, and we read the whole script, even in its current stage at that time. It had since evolved to now, to where we're at now, but they've gotten to experience all the versions and all the changes. And we would call them or we'll email them or get on Skype and say, hey, can you tell us, what we're doing here, if you like it, can you tell us if you don't like it? And so I think it only helps us tell a better story to
Right.
have them.
That's a lot of people to keep happy,
That's a
though,
lot of
right?
people. It's a lot of people, but ultimately it's not a documentary. Ultimately it's a story about Moana traveling across the Great South Pacific Ocean to find the great demigod Maui and save the
I know
world.
what I wanted to say. So at Comic-Con, everybody's freaking out because they found out that she doesn't have a romantic love interest.
That's right, no
There's
love
no guy
interest.
there to save her. So
It's
what's the deal with that?
I don't think Ron and John ever had that in their storyline, at least since I've been on the show. That's 3.5 years since I've been on the show.
So it's a Disney princess without a prince.
Correct.
Wow.
And I don't know if you even would say she's a Disney princess. She's gonna have to explain that herself on screen when you watch the film. It's actually in the film. She describes herself. So that'll be really fun for people to experience live when they watch it. But no, the thing is, this story is about it's set in the time of the great Polynesian migrations, which they would call wayfinding. And years ago, say 3,000 years ago, the Polynesian, we call them wayfinders, the Polynesian people across the Great South Pacific Ocean, and they migrated to islands like New Zealand, Hawaii, Fiji, Samoa, and all these islands out there. They did it without any GPS, obviously. They did it by navigating by the stars and by the currents of the water. And at some point, for 1,000 years, they stopped. And Ron and John felt like this was a perfect opportunity to tell the story of why they regained their voyaging migration, thing. So they took this opportunity to say, okay, well, why did they stop, and who was at the head of why they started again? So that's why they started to develop this story about Moana, and she could be the one to do so. So she's at the end of the day in this film, she's saving the world. She doesn't have time for dates or falling
But
in
she
love.
does have, one of the key things with Dramatica, for a complete story, you got your main character through line, overall story through line, but then you also have the relationship story through line with the influence character. So is there somebody that she at least has a significant relationship with, even if it's not romantic?
That would be Maui. I mean, as you see in promos, it's her and Maui. So she has a mentor character in the first act, which I will not divulge too much information about her, which is her grandmother. She's awesome, played by Rachel House, who's amazing. Amazing. She can make any line heartfelt, any line
Awesome.
funny, if it's supposed to be funny and you write something that's like, oh, it's kind of funny. She'll make it super, super funny. But anyway, Moana meets up with the demigod Maui, and played by Dwayne Johnson, who's larger than life and huge, huge personality. And he's a sweetheart, by the way.
And is he kind of a mentor to her? Well, I guess you just said her grandmother was a
Her
mentor, so.
grandmother's the mentor, but Maui is her central relationship in the film.
So is it more like a buddy picture?
Yeah, I would say it's more of a buddy film between them two, because they got to learn to work it out. I
And
think
so
that's.
they're more equal as far as like
Yeah, for sure.
standing.
But imagine that. Like, you got Dwayne Johnson, when he was cast, Jared had to, like, really up the ante on that character and say, okay, this is Dwayne Johnson. We got to get this character to be as big as that larger than life celebrity person. He's going to have to play it to the full extent of his strengths, right? So that character rose up in the storytelling and rose up to be really like a powerful character. So Ali'i Krivolo, who plays Moana, we had to, build that character up. Moana, she's the main character, so we had to build her up to play against Maui and play toe to toe, if not defeat him in the levels of, if you will, the levels of
The
entertainment
emotional
value,
level or
the
whatever.
emotional levels of storytelling. We really had to get Moana up to his playing field, because Dwayne is so strong, And I think we did. I think it's a pretty exciting,
So you're
fun
excited by
relationship.
it? You think people are gonna love it?
I think so. I'm pretty nerded out about it. I'm biased.
It
I'm biased,
looks beautiful,
obviously.
that's for sure.
Thank you. I'm biased, but I honestly can say there are sequences in this film that when the lights came up, I had tears in my eyes.
Whoa,
Yeah, because we also have, here's the other cool thing. If anybody's heard of this small thing called Hamilton in New York, we have the songwriting team with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who was involved in a different project that we were involved in. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Opetaia Fuai, who's from the islands of Samoa and I think he lives in Australia. And then we have Mark Mancina, these three powerhouse musicians. And we had Lin before Hamilton. Oh,
He
okay, good.
was when he was working with us in the very beginning of the show, he would say, "Oh yeah, I'm working on this side project called Hamilton." And we were
The
like,
side
"Oh,
hustle.
yeah." And we were like, "Oh yeah, good luck with that. We're
Nobody
working
wants to
on
see that.
this, man. Get with it." And now he's the biggest thing in the world. No, he's fantastic, and those three musicians together, when they're together, it's like an
Oh,
insane
cool.
mix of music. And so that's why I say, when I saw one of the first early tests that we had with their music put on the sequence, I couldn't help it. And it's magic when you create these stories and you forget that you drew it, and you forget that someone animated it, and you forget that the effects were done, and you forget about all this stuff, and you just watch it for what it is, and it gives you that emotional pull. That's magic. That's huge to me, and that's why we do what we do.
So it sounds like the perfect holiday film
I think so.
would be the, because it's November, right?
It's
You said?
November, it's Thanksgiving, so you eat your turkey and then go see the
Yeah.
movie. No, it's a cool movie. I think also I will say, I think the third act is something that Disney's never really done before, and
Oh.
it will be interesting. I
Whoa.
can't wait for you to see
That's
it.
a little teaser. I
I
like
kind
that.
of, I'll also say that I boarded it,
Oh, so it's amazing and really
so
passionate.
there's passion all over it. No,
Are
so
tears on my
yeah,
Cintiq.
that's right. That's right. My wife makes fun of me every time I draw, whether it's boards or whether it's just sketching, because she'll say, "I can see you smiling," and then she'll look at the page and there's a character that's smiling. So I
Getting
funnel
to the
myself
emotion of it,
through
right?
everything I do. It's pretty funny.
So then now you're on hiatus now, or whatever
Oh
you
yeah.
call it. Do you know what you're working on next? Or you probably can't say, but do you
Well, I
have a
think
general
some of the
idea?
films that have been announced, I think Disney did announce, they announced Wreck-It Ralph 2. They announced Frozen 2, right?
Right? I've
Unless I'm
heard
getting
about
in trouble.
that.
And they announced, I think, Giants. So one of those three, and I'm guessing it's going to be Giants
Okay.
right now, but I'm on a break. I'm on sabbatical for like a month.
Sabbatical, right.
Yeah,
And so what, are
so
you developing your own stuff?
I am in development. It's pretty
Excellent.
exciting. I'm sleeping in,
Oh, that's a great way
which
to
is a
develop a
good way to
project.
develop. I'm sleeping in, but no, I kind of set up a little schedule for myself. It's fun. I'm developing a few projects and getting pitches in line in order. So, A, I want to get my pitches ready so I could just ramble off like, "What else you got?" "Well, I got the story about this."
Right, of course.
And I got a couple others that I'm going deeper into.
And you don't figure out, like for me, the whole narrative first thing is like figuring out exactly what the story is and you get everything lined up. But for you like to just kind of feel out the character, right?
Yeah.
Like what's the most important thing to you when it comes to the project?
When I start developing my own stuff, I start looking at that main character and saying, "Who are they? Who is this story about?" It's right in line with what's the story about, which is what you're talking about. It's like really close together, if not intertwined. But I need to know from the character's point of view what their emotions are, what's with them, why am I even telling the story about them?
About them, right?
Yeah, about that said main character or two or whoever
With
they.
Dramatica, we call it their personal baggage, like
Yeah,
the stuff
okay.
that they would take with them into any story, regardless. It's like
That's
that personal
perfect.
stuff, because then it
Yeah,
gives you something to like latch on
that's
to.
perfect. Because with me, I go at work, I'll ask, I don't, or I'll say or ask, but I'll say, I don't understand her personality. Like early
Oh,
on in the
yeah.
show, I would say, I need to know Moana's personality. I don't know who she is. And I don't know what her problem is. What's her problem with life? What's her
Oh, that's
point?
perfect. Problem, your problem with life,
Right, what's
yes.
her point of view?
Right.
Right? And so once we started to hone in on her character and hone in on what is inside, what's that problem, everything else started to play in line because everything had to service that.
So then for your own stuff, that's what
I'm
you're
trying to
searching
do
for.
that. You know, I mean, working at Disney, you have a lot of great minds to bounce
That
stuff
help you
off of. They
out,
help you
yeah.
out. When you're on your own, you just got to work in that vacuum or in that tunnel. But inevitably, once I have something pitchable, then I'll talk to guys like you and say, "Hey,
Oh,
what do you think
excellent.
about this?" You know, but or friends I trust to give me the truth.
Right. Well, that
Yeah.
sounds great. Well, I would look forward to
Yeah.
seeing your stuff in the future, and of
Thanks,
course,
man.
look forward to Moana in November.
Yeah.
And this was fun. You're my very first host ever.
Cool.
It's very exciting.
Well, I'll come back if you want to.
For anybody who knows, you know, we're not in the closet here. Thankfully, we're in a different room because it's too hot upstairs. And that's why it sounds a little odd.
Would have been sexy, though.
But anyways, so thank you, Dave, so much for coming
by.
You're
welcome. And, thank you for having me.
Good luck with everything, and we will see you soon.
Okay. Take care, man.
I want to thank Dave for stopping by and being our first guest here on the podcast. He was my first guest, not my first host. Not sure what I was getting at there at the end. And of course, you heard me completely ignore him when he suggested coming back on, but of course, we'd love to have him back on the show. If you're interested in learning more about transforming your real life into a story, be on the lookout for an article later this week going into greater detail about how to do that. Thank you for listening. Have fun writing, and we will see you next week.